guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's another Rhode Island classic episode as I record in my childhood bedroom that now looks like something from The Shining. It is a deep burgundy with burgundy window treatments and so much more. And I'm very excited to have a little conversation because I said to myself, self, you have roughly a weekish to catch up on Orange County season 15. And I know the clips, and I think even the first several minutes of the premiere are available on YouTube for the upcoming season of Orange County. I've been tagged in them, I've shared them, but I have not watched them because for some ungodly reason, I have decided to give myself a purity test and really try to get through 15 first. And I know that there's a clip release, for example, of Shannon, I think talking to her daughters or one of her daughters or all of her daughters about her DUI arrest, but I haven't watched any of it because I really wanted to focus on making sure I sort of had all available background first. So I really am kind of running up against the clock, but I just finished watching four episodes. So I started obviously with the premiere episode, which I'd previously done a deep dive about. And then I just watched 2, 3, 4, and 5. And I have to tell you, there's some stuff to discuss. I was not expecting to find moments from season 15. It is, to me, and I know we haven't gotten into the COVID of it all yet, in episode 5, and I think a little bit of episode 4, they sort of talk about this, well, Kelly talks about this, like, no big deal thing called coronavirus, but it's really nothing, LOL. Which is honestly something that at whatever point the show was filming, I don't know if that was in January, for example, people weren't sure of what the impact of COVID was going to be. So I will give her just an inch, maybe a centimeter with some of her thinking. It's unfortunate later on that she sometimes maintains a lot of that when updated information is available. But all that being said, I really thought that this season was just going to be chaotic and unwatchable and something that I was going to be dragging myself through. And right now, I'm only 5 episodes in. I'm not against it. I mean, it's not going to change your life, but there are moments when I'm thinking to myself, I'm just kind of like happy I'm kind of watching it, because there are moments where Shannon's having a confessional saying John Jansen is my biggest supporter. She's talking about how she invested all of her money, including, I guess, her personal accounts and the money she got in the divorce, in Real for Real. She's talking about these things that I have questions about, where I really am feeling fortunate that I am watching the season right now, because I do think it's actually great preparation for the new season. So I do want to thank the AGs who certainly well prior to my decision to start watching 15 encouraged me to watch, because they said there's some stuff to discuss. And as of right now, I think they're right. Now, listen, I don't know how to embark on this journey. And I want to kind of be delicate, but I also really do want to be honest. Hopefully you can be both at once. Bronwyn is tough. What we are watching right now, her making the decision to record this season when she is 14 days sober. I don't know. I mean, listen, I don't know if reality TV should be recommended to people when it comes to casting. I think having as clear a view of what you're stepping into as possible is important. And obviously season 15, or maybe not obviously, but season 15 was not Bronwyn's first season. She had been on the show the season prior. So I think she had an understanding of what to expect. And also when you're 15 seasons into a franchise, it's not like you're season 1 or season 2. You can make a decision to be ignorant of what it is that you're signing up for. Sometimes people do. Oftentimes, like a lot of the high moneyed, maybe celebrity housewives say, well, I haven't watched anything before, you know, when they're doing press after being cast in the show. Maybe that's honest. Sometimes I genuinely think it's not. It's trying to attempt to say, like, I'm too cool for this, but are you not strategic, a strategic business person? You wouldn't want to have any idea of what it is that you're stepping into. With Bronwyn, we don't have to fear that she wasn't aware of what the show meant. And yet for her coming back, knowing everything that she's dealing with, it can be a really tough watch. The thing that I do find interesting is that she has these moments so far where she's spiraling, like really, really spiraling, acting out, yelling at people, throwing a glass in Shannon's pool or spa, jacuzzi, whatever it was. And you think to yourself, potentially, or at least I do, this woman is truly dealing with some stuff, but it's the experience of being in the middle of a hurricane. Like it's just, there's so much here and it can be tough to watch. But what I found reassuring at points in thinking to myself, should she be doing this season of this show, is that there are these moments where she seems to have clarity right after. It doesn't negate the damage that she's done, but there is something incredibly reassuring and maybe surprising about the fact that, you know, within days of her having these moments where she's flipping out, she can come to terms with the reality of, you know what, I actually was a piece of shit to this person. Or for some reason, which I genuinely do not understand, she hates Gina with a passion, which comes off as almost crass. It's like classist to the point of being crass. It makes me think, I love that Shannon constantly references in the last episode or so that she's a renter. She's trying to reassure Gina, who's upset about, you know, members of the cast talking shit about her Casita Plus, like her house that she shares with Travis and their 19 children. And it's a little, I don't want to say it's John and Kate plus eight, but it's like, it's a little bit, we're thinking of it as the Brady Bunch. Maybe this would be what the Brady Bunch would actually be like, IRL. But she's having these moments where she's understandably upset when she hears that Gina's upset that allegedly Bronwyn and Shannon are talking shit and making fun of her house. And Shannon, in response, is upset at Bronwyn for suggesting that she's participating in this. Bronwyn says essentially over and over, like, oh yeah, no, I'm talking shit. I keep talking shit about you. And it is weird to think about why she's focusing on Gina so much. And I appreciate Shannon in some of these moments in saying, well, you know what, Gina, I'm a renter. You know, Bronwyn's a renter. She's renting this ungodly 8,000 square foot house with like a discotheque for reasons that make no sense financially. There's already whispers about what the fuck level of income they actually have and are bringing in, which has not been answered up to this point, but it is genuinely confusing and maybe suspicious. I did appreciate the moment of Shannon saying to Gina, like, you should be proud of yourself. You're a homeowner. You're doing something that we are not. And those are those moments where I think, like, yes, this is the clarity that doesn't always exist on franchises, hasn't always existed on Orange County. There can be good reasons owing to entertainment why sometimes we don't necessarily look for it, but I certainly try to appreciate it when it's there. But with Bronwyn, I don't entirely understand where some of that frustration or rage or projection toward Gina comes from, with the house and constantly referencing the money and resources she has. Is that a way of trying to get people away from thinking about how much money she and Sean actually have? Because that's a little slightly counterproductive. If you're constantly referencing your abilities and your access, I would think that would draw the moths closer to the flame of trying to figure out why it is that you're so focused on these things. Or is this just a heavy-handed way of Bronwyn really trying to fit in and fit the type? As someone who obviously was cast against the type in many ways, maybe this is for her the unifying force of, like, not just punching down, which is incredibly unfortunate, the way that she seems to be making light or, you know, mocking Gina being in a very different circumstance, not having a husband who's financially supporting her. You know, she's you know, responsible for providing for three children, navigating a case involving a DUI, navigating a case where she was the victim and survivor of domestic violence. She's got a lot on her plate. And I know that Gina is a sticking point for a lot of people, members of the audience, obviously members of the cast, you know, more past than present, except LOL for Bronwyn. And I'm watching these episodes and I'm thinking to myself, listen, Gina and Emily's first season was bad. It was not a good one. I don't think I enjoyed either of them at that point. I have certainly come to really appreciate and enjoy Emily and Emily and Shane on the show. I've found myself really rooting for them. It's been incredible to watch kind of a lot of the progress as they've navigated ups and downs in their relationship. And with Gina, I wonder if Gina's really received the credit that I think she deserves for finding herself in a position where she's on a public platform. She joined the show. Obviously, there was some weird shit going on with her and Matt at that point. He wouldn't film it because of his job or not. Obviously, they were going through some marital challenges. I mean, I think he wasn't able to film because of his show. I do believe her explanation in that. But there were also other challenges in their marriage that they were, I think, attempting to navigate. And then they, you know, split up. And I just think for Gina, you know, there's a lot of kind of mockery of how she's looked on the show. Obviously, her hair has been a journey. It's not what we necessarily think of when we think of escapism. I think there's a difference between sky tops. I mean, were they ever in style? But going out of style and maybe being a little dated when we look back. But honestly, I sort of love that they're dated. It makes me remember the good times. And with Gina, just a sense of like, you know, she's a little... The hair is a challenge. The glam is a challenge. Some of the sartorial decisions are a little bit of a challenge, but she's doing her best. And is that really enough of an answer? I mean, I can feel an inherent spiritual eye roll at that, but I also think her storyline is interesting and she's engaging so much with the cast right now that while I know I have disagreed with her on a lot, and certainly in recent seasons, her dynamics with Shannon have been tough for me to navigate at points, because I think she's made some correct assessments of Shannon's fuck-ups. And then at other points, I'm like, okay, you are painting this woman as the literal devil, and I'm not exactly sure I agree. But otherwise, I feel like maybe Gina hasn't been given enough credit. And her glow-up is insane. Like her hair now, her looks at the reunions, she just seems to be exuding confidence. And it makes me really appreciate how far we've gone. And to people who challenge and kind of make fun of her, because the hair, listen, the hair's a mess. Okay, let's keep it real. The hair is, it's not good. It's not good work. Not every art piece is going to be on display at a museum. Some of it is not going to make anything after the canvas. You know, like we're really kind of, I don't know if this is, you know, some Kandinsky kind of spirit, but it's not really lining up some of the extensions with some of the, you know, original roots or whatever. I don't know. I've never had extensions. I have ungodly thick hair. But what a tangent. But with Gina, I just kind of wonder, like, I understand that people turn to housewives for escapism. You want to see the money, you want to see the wealth. Certainly since the early days of Orange County, we've seen what happens when some of that wealth has been cashed with invisible ink. We've seen those public moments of the kids receiving eviction notices, which it really, truly lands with a thud. But with, you know, some of the critique about Gina, I just kind of think of early days New York, and I'm not comparing the two. I'm not equalizing the two. And of course, people can find Gina obnoxious or too much or maybe frustrating to watch. You can say that about many housewives, and it doesn't mean that you're incorrect. But I also think, you know, the early days, Bethany almost wasn't cast on New York because she didn't have any money and the show wasn't sure what they could do with her. It was like, you're not married. You're in this, you know, committed relationship with Jason 1.0. Before the second, Jason the first, and you don't have any money. And so does this make sense for the show? And they realized, I guess, after some you know, series of back and forth that it did, and it was the right call. She broke out, and it was that kind of tension of having a contrast between people who are seemingly loaded and in the circles of society with someone who's not. And it worked for the show. It was this inherent friction and dynamic that provided additional depth. I'm not saying that Gina is original Bethany, but I am saying that I think sometimes some of the critique against her has not been entirely warranted. I think you can certainly drag her. You can absolutely say, you know, I think she's obnoxious or whatever else, but I do think that she brings value to the show, and I'm appreciating her on the episodes that I'm seeing thus far. And, you know, the end of episode five ends with Gina and Bronwyn, who've really kind of gone through it and battled with each other, having this moment where Bronwyn is, you know, working on her upcoming second vow renewal because she's celebrating 20 years with Sean, which is 20 years with Sean. And Gina, you know, says to her, they just went to an AA meeting because Bronwyn invited her, and Gina said, yeah, I'll go. It was an open meeting. I've never been to an AA meeting, so I assume that I might be entirely inaccurate. I assume that an open meeting means it's a little bit more kind of flexible with how the discussion works. I say that because Gina and Bronwyn go to coffee after, and they note that someone at the meeting went up to both of them before the start and said, you know, would one of you like to lead the meeting? Gina says, I nominate Bronwyn to do that. And Bronwyn decides that the theme of the meeting is going to be discussing anger, and in front of a group of people at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, apologizes to Gina and takes responsibility. And that, to me, I think is great. Then they have this sit down, and Gina says, listen, your vow renewal is coming up. I don't want to drink, and I'm, you know, making it my promise to you that I will not drink because I want you to make sure that you have a safe space at the vow renewal. And noting that Bronwyn had earlier kind of been super triggered and lost her shit at Shannon's event, was extremely uncomfortable being around people who were consuming alcohol, let alone potentially copious amounts of it, you can tell that Bronwyn is moved by this. And this is one of those moments where I'm like, this is why I goddamn love the show, because there are times where there are fights and conflicts that are really chaotic, really strong. And because I think people are sort of forced to keep each other in their friend circle because they remain on the show, you can have these moments where they're given the opportunity to open up because you sort of have to. If you're continue filming, I mean, you can certainly clench your heart if you'd like, but obviously, I think production producers encourage these people to continue to talk to each other and engage. And so you have this moment where both of these women are able to kind of meet each other. Now, all of that being fine and good, when it comes to Bronwyn's frustration at Gina, obviously it existed before this whole text mishigas, but this season, a lot of it seems to be pointed Gina's way because she was out, I guess, with a group of people, including maybe Bronwyn and Sean. She, you know, went back home. Sean took Bronwyn home. And when Gina was back at her place, she received a text from Sean that made her uncomfortable. She expressed that, and then at a later point, and then Bronwyn lost her ever-loving mind and was essentially accusing Gina of manipulating the situation and certainly not listening or respecting Gina's discomfort, which to me was really surprising. But, you know, certainly there are a lot of people who carry with them a set of values and whatever else about listening to women when they're talking about discomfort and respecting their feelings. It can be tough to be consistent with that when you feel like it's affecting your personal life. It is fascinating to see how quickly people can change when their sense of morality or ethics or sensitivities are challenged. But Bronwyn certainly went on the absolute offense and was, I think, a piece of shit toward Gina. So I went back to get a screenshot of this text because Bronwyn at this point with Sean, and again, I just finished season five, do not seem to understand why Gina would in any way feel uncomfortable. And in fact, said something along the lines of like, she's being embarrassing by making this into a thing. How dare she? Like, she's being manipulative. They didn't use the word manipulative, I don't think, but that was certainly the sense of things that I got. So I went back to see what this text was. Because while I really genuinely understood Gina's perspective, I was like, I need to like see this again. So Sean sent her this text after some night. So, after they'd both gotten back to their respective homes, Sean texted her and said, "Hi, Gina, just checking in. All is okay. Smiley face. Bronwyn is asleep, but I got her to the condo first. Winky face. Anyway, have a good night. And it was great to spend time with you." Smiley face again. And then the second text, "Oh, this is Sean." Probably should have started with that smiley face. Now, Gina said essentially that she was uncomfortable with this. She said it, I think, in a conversation with Tamara, who is not on this season of the show. And Tamara had some feelings about the text. And then what was that line that Vicky once said, like, tell a Tamara telephone? It certainly got amplified and spread because Gina and Tamara are having a conversation where they're both saying like, yeah, this is kind of odd to do. And then Tamara multiplies it by 1,000 of like, yes, Gina was feeling incredibly, incredibly uncomfortable, certainly bringing it to the next level, making things a little bit more heightened, being manipulative in her delivery. And that, I think, helped set off Bronwyn. But regardless, the foundation of this is that Gina did not feel great. And Bronwyn felt like it was her being, again, use of the word, I don't know, her being manipulative about this and making it into something extra. And also, I think they were trying to say that she was being disrespectful or disingenuous because they've talked about having an open marriage and that somehow Gina was latching on to that. And my response is like, first off, I actually didn't think this was an appropriate text to send. The number of smiley faces, it was one of these weird kind of messages to receive. You can text someone and be like, just wanted to check in, make sure you got home safe. I understand that Sean is like the human embodiment of a smiley face emoji, but that doesn't mean that his behavior is always going to be received by that. Sending a winky face is just, it comes across as a little too intimate. And I know that sounds odd because it's literally just an emoji, but I don't think it's appropriate. And I certainly didn't think that Sean and Bronwyn's reaction to Gina's discomfort was in any way appropriate. I thought it was extremely hypocritical for the ways that they have attempted to portray themselves as like really invested in other people's thoughts and feels. They're pretty closed off when they feel like they're potentially under attack or in the spotlight. And I do think he deserved to be criticized. And just because he's trying to come off as friendly, I mean, take a note. Like, I know it's a text message. You're not doing this. You're not in conversation with someone in the same scene, but I mean, in the same scene or in the same room at that point, but it just came across as too personal. And I actually don't think it's out of bounds for Gina to potentially feel like, is this person trying to test the waters here? Like, if he's being really friendly to me, is that just someone being friendly checking in or trying to start a friendship? Or is this someone being friendly trying to check in and also maybe something else, dot, dot, dot? I understand that. I don't think it's out completely out of bounds for Gina to feel like this was maybe potentially a little inappropriate or regardless made her feel uncomfortable. As AGs know, I am spiritually mid-20s plus. And like many people, the conversation about saving and investing can feel really complicated. And for me personally, often feels like it's out of reach. Like I'm joining a conversation in the middle of it. I'm not quite sure really how to start, which is why I am so thankful for Acorns. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. BCC, PK, and Dorit. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. That's perfect for me and my life. I want to make positive change, but so often it's hard to figure out where to begin. Acorns does that work. I always felt like in order to start investing, I needed to have one big lump sum. But Acorns takes away that kind of stress. It's small, important changes that you can make in your life for your future. Head to acorns.com/andyscrolls or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/andyscrolls. Much like Jennifer Aiden on her last appearance on Watch What Happens Live, and I do mean last, when it comes to summer, I need to keep hydrated, and that's why I love Fiji water. Jen's thirst might not ever be quenched, but with Fiji water, mine always is. Fiji water is Earth's finest water. Unlike the other two top premium bottled water brands, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring. Fiji water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving it its signature soft, smooth taste. And that's why Fiji water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the U.S. And P.S., Fiji water has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH. Get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick up some today. Alexis Bellino, imagine how much better her season could have gone if she had just simply quenched that thirst. And my recommendation? It's not just water, it's Fiji water. I started taking Hormone Harmony because for me, that time of the month feels like it became the entire month. Dealing with cravings, bloating, not feeling like myself. Well, now it's easier to manage PMS and menopause with Hormone Harmony. My number one, supporting hormonal balance and regulation. Hormone Harmony also helps relieve symptoms of menopause, improves sleep quality, relieves hot flashes and mood swings. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It is zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews, and there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndyScrolls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndyScrolls for 15% off today. In a perfect world, the way that Sean and Bronwyn would have responded to that was to be like, I'm so sorry that you felt uncomfortable and he will change his behavior in the future. But instead, it was like this like Rocky and Bullwinkle style, weird cartoonish villainry fight that they're having of like putting it into the dynamics of, you know, Sean and Bronwyn versus the world that I didn't think was really going anywhere or was anything great. And also, Sean is on the show way too goddamn much. It's like, you can't get rid of him. There are these moments, I understand they're working through a lot on their marriage or whatever, but, and that he's been her provider and also enabler as they've both agreed as they're working through what, Bronwyn's alcoholism has meant for their marriage and really kind of unpacking behaviors that were intended potentially to be supportive that were also toxic. And I know that that's complicated, but I'm also like, does this woman not have any other friends in her life? Her scenes are all filmed with her kids and her husband. And I know that she has, I mean, talk about John and K plus eight. I know that she has 1,700 children, but is there not someone else that she can have these conversations with? It's giving me a little, and I mean, genuinely, no insult to the people I'm about to mention, but it's giving me a little Alex and Simon of like, this guy's going to show up at a dinner that's supposed to be like ladies' night, just the people in the cast. He's just going to show up because they have this kind of codependent style relationship with each other, but it's also like they both feel that they've been equally cast on the show. And it's a little bit much. I kind of feel like enough. Now, I know IRL, they're engaged in this incredibly litigious divorce. I don't even know if it's a custody fight still or fight for some sort of financial settlement or support with each other. Things in real time are not going great. Certainly on the show, I think they're trying to navigate this as best they can. And it does make me wonder, I just kind of want to put this out there because I don't know how this works with reality TV. And there's certainly a difference between the support that is provided on reality TV competition shows and the support that is provided on housewives style franchise shows. But the Bronwyn of it all, some other stuff that's happened, questions about Morocco, I don't know. I know that there is, I think this came up on the in the Vanity Fair piece on the Reality Reckoning, that there is technically like a psychologist or someone in the mental health field who has been known to like check in on cast members who's deputized or hired by, I think, production for some of these shows. I wish there was a little bit more support available because I just have this sense of things of watching Bronwyn spiral at this point where I'm like, who's kind of advising her and acting as a resource behind the scenes? Is there someone doing that? Because at a certain point, this goes above any kind of producer, line producer, producer assigned to her to get her through her storyline as any housewife would and has. You know, like, who is the person making sure that this set is actually, because the set is her life, the set is this life in this universe, to make sure that some of this is a good idea. It just kind of makes me feel like there should be someone there. And there are other instances of that, like Gina talking about whether or not to provide a victim impact statement about the domestic violence and, you know, Matt's sentencing. She has this back and forth of trying to decide whether or not she's going to share a victim impact statement. And she discusses that it's, you know, with her lawyer, it can be a good and healthy way to kind of process things and move forward. She wants him to understand what he has done to her, the cost of it. At the end of episode 5, she's invited Matt and his girlfriend over. She is extending the olive branch. They're working on co-parenting. They're working on having supportive partners by their side and kind of blending all of these various families together, all the kids together, and trying to be as cordial as possible, which is, I think, for Gina, added a level of possible guilt or I don't know if it's shame, but certainly some guilt over whether to provide this victim impact statement, not just because of the relationship dynamics that she had with Matt, where because he was the financial provider and maybe because of some, you know, gender norms or whatever else, that she felt like from a power perspective, he had more power and authority in the relationship. And she was uncomfortable with the idea of standing up to him. Like, she was genuinely, understandably nervous about that, and also felt like, well, what if he gets sentenced to time away? Is that my responsibility? What, how would I feel about, you know, looking my kids in the eye essentially and knowing that, you know, Matt is possibly even, you know, serving time? And my reaction to that, which I think I shared on the premiere episode of the season 15 deep dive, is like, that's entirely Matt's fault. Anything, any kind of, you know, dad is like, you know, at camp, or any kind of guilt or shame, any kind of possible limited custody that went into effect, any like stay away orders in the time immediately following the domestic violence incident is entirely Matt's responsibility to carry. But the reality is that Gina feels guilt from that. She's trying to ensure that her kids are able to get through this process and get through this process publicly as safely as humanly possible, where she's looking toward the future and thinking like, I don't want my kids to feel residual damage or trauma from this. It's a conversation Shannon has on episodes 2 of, you know, I came from a quote unquote broken family. My parents were divorced and I feel like I duplicated a lot of the poor behaviors that I saw exhibited, some of the trauma that I experienced as a child watching my parents go through that. And that I've continued that with my kids in what they watch and experienced because of her really complicated, toxic marriage to David Bedore. And with Gina, she ends episode 5 being like, I am going to give a victim impact statement, which I'm so proud of her for deciding that she is going to do this. And she is doing that because it also essentially removes the option of denial from that. You know, just because they're working on co-parenting, just because they're in a place where they can have conversation and seemingly be friendly, does not mean that she was not traumatized. That does not take away from the trauma of what she experienced. And while she certainly can go on a healing journey with him and they're finding ways to communicate to each other and do so in a respectful way, what happened still happened. And I, in thinking about Gina, in thinking of Gina's perspective, can certainly understand even potentially a feeling of anger of like, does this person think that what he did was okay or maybe forgivable because we're on speaking terms now? Like it doesn't. And Gina has the right to process the trauma. And I think some of her fear of doing so publicly is not actually the idea of it. You know, the element of Gina kind of trying to figure out how to share this victim impact statement in court in front of Matt is obviously bringing up a lot of fear. And as I said, 35 times, you know, feelings of possible guilt. But I do also think for her to get through this and do so publicly, to hold him publicly accountable, not just because she's on a reality TV show and is already a public figure, is to me incredibly important. To say that to the court, this person violated me. I felt unsafe. I was in fear of my life. And it happened. It happened and it had an impact and it still does. She said it was the single most certainly terrifying thing that she's experienced, but also the almost essentially like the single most important thing that she's experienced because of what it did to her and the ways it changed her. She's navigating how to heal from it and come out of it. But I do think this public element, as terrifying as it might be with all of the assorted feelings that brings with it, is all the more reason why it's important to, you know, go ahead and give that statement. Now, I don't know when it happens. I don't know if it's discussed. It certainly, I would think, will be discussed as I get through more of these episodes of season 15. But I was really proud for her and the way that the episode ended, both with this, you know, really kind of calm, respectful conversation between Gina and Bronwyn, and also the way that Gina was kind of connecting her own growth and how to process what she went through. Because I don't think any of us will ever forget, you know, what we maybe potentially read about that situation, her breaking down at the reunion prior when she's talking about it. It really was an incredibly upsetting thing to hear. And so to watch her process that, this is one of those things when, you know, Lord knows I don't believe in a guilty pleasure, but when people talk about and try to minimize and dismiss housewives specifically, I do think it comes across, you know, because of this gendered idea that women's entertainment provides less value than entertainment or even like reality TV that's focused on men. But I also think like these are conversations and situations that are being brought to light in such a public way. And it is, to me, enormously valuable for people who haven't experienced it to get a sense of what the process of processing is like for Gina and for people in the audience who might feel seen and heard, who may have gone through a situation of being in an incredibly toxic relationship or marriage, may have gone through being the victim and survivor of domestic violence, or have a loved one who have. So it's one of those reasons where I'm watching these episodes where I'm like, go fuck yourself if you feel like there's no value that's being provided by housewives, or you roll your eyes at the idea of people loving and wanting to talk about housewives, because we're talking about real goddamn shit that has real consequences with high AF stakes. And this is what I really appreciate, while also noting that some of it's a little difficult to watch when it comes to Bronwyn Wyndham Burke. Like, I get why she didn't continue on the show. I did see something. I mean, not that that was her choice. She was certainly fired. But I saw something recently. I don't know what interview she had. She gave some interview, I think recently, where she said that she was addicted to fame. And I get that. I think that becomes clear here. I wonder if she is just one of those personality types who just finds herself always enmeshed in drama. And I think for her, kind of processing a little bit of a level of like, what is this going to look like on Housewives? Because certainly she's stripped bare during a lot of season 15, from what I've seen so far, because of her journey dealing with and coming to terms with saying, my name is Bronwyn and I'm an alcoholic, which is how the premiere ends. Certainly there's coming to terms with that, but there's also just a feeling of her heightening moments where I'm like, I don't know that this is a performance in any way for reality TV. Like when she's kind of losing her shit against other cast members, I just kind of wonder, is this one of those situations where your life has always seemingly been filled with some element of drama, where there's something about this that you just have always had, not like a cloud around you, but you've seemingly always had, I don't know, drama and maybe toxicity and things that always appear to be complicated. And speaking of toxic and complicated, I know that Dr. Deb appears later in this season. Bronwyn mentions that essentially her mom was trying to blackmail her into saying that what Bronwyn had previously shared about their toxic relationship, she wanted Bronwyn to say that all of that was a lie. And Bronwyn says, like, in New York. So I don't know if that means, I assume that means prior to the reunion, Dr. Deb wanted Bronwyn, according to Bronwyn, this is on the episode, Dr. Deb wanted Bronwyn to take back anything that she had said negatively about their relationship in her childhood. And if Bronwyn wouldn't do that, according to Bronwyn, Deb said, I'm going to tell everyone you're an alcoholic. And then, spoiler alert, she does. She calls Tamra and says Bronwyn is an alcoholic. This woman who's a doctor, I mean, listen, we've seen people who work in the medical field who are parents of some of these housewives behaving in ways that I would hope they wouldn't with patients. For example, Candace's dynamic with her mom, where her mom is a very successful, I forget if she's a psychologist, something in the mental health field, and was also diagnosing her daughter as a means to shame her for behavior and also get her to shut her fucking mouth about, you know, whatever happened at that event with the purse and whatnot. We've seen this before. We've also seen it with spouses too, of using their education or their job as a doctor, lawyer, or whatever else as a way to get their wife, spouse, partner to shut the fuck up. Thinking of Lenny and Lisa as well. It's not a good look for Deb to have that come up. Do I believe it? 1000%. I 1000%. There was some sort of conversation here. And to think that she actually went ahead and did it against her daughter's wishes, it's just real cringe. I know from the trailer for the season, whatever, that she pops up in later episodes. I don't know how productive that will be. Maybe it will. My guess is maybe not. But that's some hashtag rough, tough stuff. That's really, really tough. As is more of Bronwyn's behavior, again, with this whole thing with Gina and the house and saying that her house is trying to minimize the house and then saying, well, I was doing that to hurt you, but also Shannon was involved. but did Shannon say whether or not Gina's house, did she say that Gina's house was small? Or did she say it was sad? Did she say it was depressing? I don't know that people are really going to get answers here. At this point in the season, Gina and Emily essentially decide that, you know, whatever Shannon said was not made with ill intent. Bronwyn certainly feels differently. The one thing here that separates, I think, a little bit of maybe confusion or questions of what Shannon actually said to Bronwyn off camera about Gina's house, townhouse, is that Bronwyn said not only did Shannon say, you know, the house is small or sad or depressing, some combination, and P.S., there's a big difference in saying a house is small versus a house is sad or depressing, and also saying if you talk about this on camera, if you tell anyone that I said this, I'm going to lie and say I didn't. I mean, either you said that or you didn't. Bronwyn, though, saying that, that's a clear statement. Either it happened or didn't. When it comes to like, who do I believe? Do I think that Shannon called the house small? Absolutely. And as Gina says, like, yeah, the house is small. Like, I'm not pretending that it's a bajillion square feet. But there are certainly some residual questions here of Shannon's intent. Was she trying to mock Gina's house? Was she trying to gossip about the house? What's the difference here? And also, how is this going to affect the upcoming vow renewal between Bronwyn and Sean that the cast is going to next week? The trailer for the episode includes Kelly coming into the, I don't know if it's the hotel or event space, seeing Bronwyn and being like, I have tequila. I didn't know it was going to trigger you, but I brought it, which isn't great. I think someone told me that Shannon does too, that Shannon and John like sneak in booze or something. I'll see that on the next episode, which is episode 6. But that's a definite yikes moment of like, what the fuck? Because you know that this person is an alcoholic. That to me brings questions of how can you not go through maybe you can't go through a night or whatever the parameters here are. I don't know if there was no alcohol served at the reception or it was no hard alcohol. I'm not quite sure. And certainly we'll find out. But if, for example, it's like beer and wine are served, but nothing else. And if tequila for Bronwyn really is a trigger, if Shannon and John can't get through that night without having tequila or some sort of hard alcohol, because God forbid someone would feel uncomfortable or wouldn't have enough fun. I mean, babe, think of other ways of having fun. I don't really understand.
There are so many moments that make up a year. The big moments and milestones, birthdays, anniversaries, when Shan came to the clawfist. And then there are the small moments, the slow morning spent making a decadent breakfast, running to a grocery store to get 9 lemons to put in a bowl. All of these moments come together to create our year and in the end, create our life. Artifact Uprising wants to help you preserve your meaningful moments this holiday season. Whether you want to say, I love you with the perfect gift, display favorite memories in your home, or connect with loved ones throughout the year, BCC Shan, they have a product you can personalize. Artifact Uprising is a Colorado-based company that creates premium quality, customizable photo goods for your digital photos. I just ordered a few photo books with Artifact Uprising, a hardcover travel photo book in this gorge shade of Pacific blue, which is perfect for the credenza in my living room, devoted to my first ever trip to Paris, and a photo book in midnight blue, one for myself and for my family. Moments from my childhood, my parents spending time together, it is going to be the perfect gift for Tobes and Chard. This is something incredibly special that will keep us connected. Artifact Uprising makes it easy to tell your story. Through the end of the year, AGs can give Artifact Uprising a try and get 20% off for new customers or 15% off if you've purchased before. Just visit artifactuprising.com and use code AndySGirls through December 31. As AGs know, I am spiritually mid-20s plus. And you know who else is? My dear, close, personal best friend and also deity, Jennifer Lopez. J-Lo is actually the reason that Google launched Google Images, because of that infamous Versace dress. And she's still, 20 years later, more sought after than ever before. With skin like hers, it's not a surprise.
Love don't cost it a thing, but I don't want to continue to wait for tonight. Whoa. And thanks to JLo Beauty, we can glow right along with her. Get that JLo glow for yourself with JLo Beauty's Deluxe Kit, the one-and-done skincare solution clinically proven to tighten and lift for instant, long-lasting results. And much like my dear best friend, Jen, I absolutely agree. My personal favorite is JLo's Limitless Glow face mask. It is so soothing, easy to apply, cleansed my skin, had the mask on, and truly was having a spa night at home. So if you're tired of trying to crack your own skincare code, try JLo Beauty for 60 days. If you're not completely satisfied, just return the bottles, even if empty, and get your money back. Want that JLo glow? Head to jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls and get a special gift of 4 free masks for listeners of Andy Scrolls. Head to jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls for 4 free masks and free shipping today. That's jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls.
Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build your own perfect clothes with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. I am so thankful to Armoire because I was in a genuine pickle last weekend. I was rushing to New Jersey, shout out NJ, the Garden State, not hunting for new housewives, but going to a friend's baby shower, and I had literally nothing to wear. So thank goodness for Armoire. I opened my bag from Armoire, grabbed this beautiful, bright lime green Sachin and Bobby midi dress, and it fit like a glove, and it saved me all of that extra stress. There are so many benefits to Armoire. You always have something new to wear without the hassle and closet clutter. It's sustainable. You no longer have to feel bad about only wearing an outfit once, and Armoire is women-founded and women-led. Right now, AGs can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/AndyScrolls. That is armoire.style, armoire.style/AndyScrolls to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
I think also, you know, one of the reasons why this season is, to me, really important to watch before the new season starts, obviously for the dynamics between John and Shan, and also some whispers here about Shan saying things when she's maybe been drinking. And then her follow-up is, I don't lie. If I didn't say this thing, I don't lie, versus I don't remember. Or maybe I'm saying things if I've had a little turtle time that I don't necessarily mean, or I would be delivering them in ways, having a different kind of fun with this like honesty, hot goss that I wouldn't be saying if I wasn't drinking, which is tough. And also, she's having conversations with her daughter. They're talking about divorce. They're talking about how her kids are handling David and Shan's divorce. Sophie is working on writing a book, which I don't know if that book happened. If, you know, she's talking about taking it to publishers and trying to sell it. I genuinely do not remember. I know that Heather Dubrow's daughter Max wrote a book that was published however many seasons ago, I think relatively recently, but I don't know if Sophie's book ended up coming out. But regardless, Sophie has a confessional and says about the relationship with Shannon and John, essentially like, he's funny, like nice guy. But also she says, I want someone who can support her mom emotionally and financially. And I sometimes don't think John can do both of those, but it's really not my business. And I just think, what is Shannon's experience watching that episode back? She's tried to phrase her relationship with John as it being like kind of the happy ending of like, you know, my kids had to experience things that I wish they hadn't, that I have guilt about, shame about, concern about how this will affect them in their futures and maybe in how they view relationships, what feels not necessarily normal, but comfortable for them. That is certainly really loaded when you think about the ways that sometimes we duplicate toxic relationships we've seen or experienced with future partners. And, you know, she's saying, well, they saw a lot of shit with David, but thank God for John so they can see me be happy, which doesn't super end well. But also we have this confessional of Sophie being like, it's not going great. And P.S., I don't know if Sophie is trying to say that John can do one of these things of emotionally supporting Shan or financially supporting Shan, but not both at once, or he can do neither, because I have questions about John's finances that haven't entirely been explained. And I certainly think there are some questions of how he was supporting Shannon emotionally, because then we hear shit from other cast members after they broke up that he was fat shaming her, body shaming her, seemingly calling her a piece of shit, calling her lazy, whatever else. Not exactly the nice guy that we've been led to believe or that Shannon is trying to convince us that he is. After the fact, after they broke up. So I have personal questions about his goddamn finances, because I also think it's super fucking strange that he's filed suit and has gone after her and is seemingly trying to publicly embarrass her by talking about the fact that money that it does appear that she borrowed from him, that they couldn't actually settle this, that he wanted to continue it as an continue to fight this out, and that he had to mention in some interview with like People or whatever the fuck, that the money was used, some of the money that she borrowed was used for plastic surgery and a facelift. So then all of these stupid headlines are like, Shannon borrowed $75,000 for a facelift, as if her facelift cost $75. It was a lot less than that. I don't know how much it was, maybe 10, but it wasn't 75. This guy to me does not feel, I don't know if that was inspired by the fact that the lawsuit or letter, whatever it was at that point, was sent while the show, I think, was winding down filming. Does not make me feel like this guy really is as private as he wanted us to believe that he was, or as uncomfortable in engaging in drama and participating in the show as he and Shannon at one point wanted us to believe that he was. He was this quiet, soft-spoken man. And also, speaking of finances, I don't know that one of the reasons that he's fighting to get this money back is because, you know, he now has a new castmate. Friend of, but still castmate, who he needs to seemingly provide for in some way, or maybe make her think that he's a little bit more fancy pants than he actually is. I don't know. I have questions about John, and obviously I'm a Shan stan. I can still criticize her as I have, but I have a lot of empathy for her, and this man just does not seem great. And I take Sophie at a high, high level of like, oh my fucking God, when she's saying these things. Because at the point in which she's saying it, her mom and John are seemingly doing okay, wink, wink. Everything's fine. I'm not quite sure, you know, what's really going on behind the scenes at this point. But my guess is we'll see some more tension as the episodes continue. And also, speaking of episodes continuing, really didn't expect this. Do I like Elizabeth? I think I do. The way that she's kind of talking to people, is she a little, not really like out to lunch, like is she a little sort of peace and love and look at the flowers and life in ways that don't necessarily make sense with the current cast energy? Like, is there a little bit of that? Yeah, that still exists, but not as much as I thought there was. And I think she genuinely, to me, comes across as like a nice person trying to figure it out. She obviously overshares, which I don't think is because of reality TV. I think that's just her personality type. I do think it could have something to do with the trauma she experienced as a child. We're hearing a lot about the fact that she was dealing with a family that she says they had no money. They were very, very poor. Her mom was doing her best to make things work. They were going to, I forget if it was a grocery store or something else, and looking for food that hadn't spoiled but had been thrown away so that they could survive and have something to eat, and that she knew from a young age she needed to get
out and get money, just survive, have a different kind of life. And then she did. She met someone while she was in college or after college. Turns out he was a billionaire. She's having this high-flying life. But the ways that she talks about and still is so obviously connected to her childhood trauma, I don't know. I just kind of have a lot of empathy for her. She's talked about her sister, the fact that she has this, you know, close, connected relationship with her nieces, that her sister's daughter, she has fears of what her, you know, sister's, her niece has experienced and knows about her mom, and about her niece's mom, meaning Elizabeth's sister. Turns out Elizabeth's sister is a heroin addict and has seemingly disappeared. She offered to pay for her sister to go to rehab, but her sister has to agree to that, did initially, and then kind of went off of the grid. And she talks about, you know, the fact that people know that Elizabeth has a lot of resources, a lot of money, and potentially think, you know, why aren't you helping your sister? And Elizabeth's reaction to that is, I want to, but she has to accept my help. And feeling the guilt of being someone who grew up with nothing, who has many somethings now, and feels like, you know, I have this money, which I maybe never thought that I actually would. And I want to help my sister, but it's not the cure-all. Like, having the financial resources does not dictate or necessitate the happy ending or this person getting really necessary support, which is devastating. And also, there's this moment where she's talking, I think it's in a confessional. She's talking about her relationship with her sister. You know, Elizabeth was the older sister. She's talking about the fact that she holds onto her clothing because she hopes that she'll see her sister again and like they can play dress up as they used to. I don't know how to describe it. So great job talking about it on a podcast episode, but it's really moving. I was really moved by it. And she talks about, you know, her dynamics with being the older sister to her younger sister. I think her younger sister's name is Anna. And then she compares Anna to Bronwyn. And she says something along the lines of like, Bronwyn just has that emptiness. And you think about someone calling another person empty, and it sounds like an insult. It sounds like, obviously, painful potentially for Bronwyn to hear, but she's saying it, Elizabeth's saying it with so much sincerity and genuine compassion. She is talking about wanting to, as Gina did, but much earlier on, wanting to be a safe space for Bronwyn, feeling some tension or frustration with other members of the cast who are really making light of what Bronwyn is going through and either don't understand it and or don't understand it, but also don't give a fuck. And just to watch her kind of communicate that, I don't know. I really like her. I get why she was one and done. I understand it. She has a really specific energy. She may not have been long for this world, but I'm appreciating her on the show in a way I really genuinely didn't think I would. I just thought like she seems a little bit out to lunch. She seems like this kind of kooky energy that can be hard to watch or maybe cringe, where she doesn't have a lot of like spatial awareness of the universe that she's in. But in watching her the last couple episodes, I'm like, you know what? I like this lady. I enjoy her. Didn't expect it, but I appreciate it. And I think that there's something great about the fact that she's on this specific season. Maybe not great for her because it was, you know, considered historically a hot mess, but something about her being there as a little bit of a buffer, maybe between some of the stuff that Kelly is saying about Bronwyn. And listen, Bronwyn needed to go after this season. I think she can be hard to watch. Her personality, the fact that she called John Jansen's son, who was working at a real for real event at Shannon's house where Bronwyn lost her shit. At one point, she's just trying to get this guy's attention to please get her husband, I'm using please with little side eye, and calls him Lemonade Boy because he's wearing an event staff t-shirt. Later on, she apologizes and says she doesn't apologize to him directly, but apologizes, I guess, on behalf of her behavior and says she didn't mean anything of it. But my God, when it comes to people who are elitist on this show, Bronwyn rises pretty fucking high. Like, I know there's other stuff where it seems like she's whatever we consider progressive to be, but also she is certainly behaving in ways that I would consider classist and elitist and obnoxious. Just obnoxious. She comes across at points as just really fucking obnoxious, and that's tough. She also, you know, is trying to navigate all of this stuff. Being on reality TV obviously is a choice. This is not the Sea Org. She didn't sign a billion-year contract. So there is a little bit of, you know, concern I feel about her participating in this show so early in recovery, wondering what kind of resources production just provides in general. Like, I know that my guess is that they probably say, like, here's this person who's this resource who's on call, but like, are you really doing your best to make sure that these people are in as safe as an environment as you can possibly be on a show and a franchise like Housewives, which is complicated and it sort of thrives on toxicity. But I do think that there's a barometer here for people who need to keep a little bit more of a close eye on and make sure that they genuinely are aware of support systems that are available. I think that should be required. I mean, if that's not a part of the reality reckoning, it should be. I don't even know what's the status update? Has anybody checked the AIM for Bethany trademark bending's reality reckoning? I don't even know where things are. I know obviously there's a lot of legal cases and several of those are being represented by the attorneys that she's introduced to the world of the reality reckoning. But I don't know where things kind of are with at one point she had a TikTok, this was maybe, when was this, forever ago, where she had an actual sort of list of things that she wanted to see. Did anything happen with that, or have we all been distracted by the fact that she went to Chanel? I mean, is that the new reality reckoning where Chanel NBC has been replaced by a $15,000 purse? I don't know. Couldn't tell you. Listen, all this to say, I'm into the show so far. Really didn't expect it, but I actually think, you know, if you haven't seen it, if you haven't seen season 15, I mean, good for you, number one, but it's not a bad watch. I'd say that noting we have not hit peak COVID yet. And I know that those episodes when like they're the cast, I think at this point, is sort of recording themselves with iPhones maybe or whatever the fuck they were doing, is going to be a tough watch. But so we're on the cusp of that, I think, but we're not quite there yet. And the five episodes I've seen, I'm like, you know what? It's not great. You're not going to put this on anybody's top anything of anything. But there's still stuff to discuss. There's still value here. And there is still definitely some sense of being entertained, God forbid. So that's my progress report. That's my AIM status update on Orange County season 15. I actually think even though it is Czech's phone 1:33 in the morning, that I might actually watch Bronwyn's vow renewal before I head off to Betty Bye in this wonderful, very soothing burgundy toned. Also, the rug is red. Don't forget. I know I've gotten into this on prior episode when I was recording at home, but before we go to Betty Bye, I kind of want to watch the vow renewal episode. So if that's not an indicator that I have nothing else to do, that's not inaccurate, but I'm excited to get through the rest of the season. And then, oh guys, we're so close to the premiere of season whatever the fuck is it, 18? Did I make that up? I think it's season 18 of Orange County. I am so excited. Listen, in the meantime, you can follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley, also allegedly Threads, same handle. Sign up for the Andy's Girls Patreon. It's the number one way to support the pod. You get exclusive bonus episodes, which I love to record. I do want to do a Satchel Spectacular as soon as the Orange County premiere airs. So please ready those satchels of gold. And also let me know your thoughts and feels on New Jersey. Obviously ongoing. Going to have some thoughts, I'm sure, about Sunday's episode. And so you can send me your satchels of gold, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Clorne Ben Simone, by sliding into my DMs on Instagram. And if you have a thesis, a satchel spectacular, you can email it to andysgirlsshow@gmail.com. And it is the light of my life, a total pleasure to unpack those on Patreon episodes. So please let me know your thoughts about all things New Jersey, maybe all things Lindsay's pregnancy announcement, how that's going to impact the upcoming season of Summer House. And certainly Orange County, from possibly watching 15 or maybe doing a rewatch now or a first time watch with me. Let me know. I would love to read them and hopefully share them on upcoming Patreon episodes. And hopefully everybody had a happy and safe 4th of July. Thanks for listening to this episode. I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.
Hey, Chicago, Wayfair's big sale is on now. It's Way Day. For 3 days only, now through October 7th, get up to 80% off online and at the new Wayfair store at Eden's Plaza in Wilmette. Score furniture, cookware, holiday decor, and more. Way Day is the sale to stock up for the season ahead. Plus, enjoy family fun and in-store surprises. Shop Wayfair's big sale now through October 7th online and at the Wayfair store at Eden's Plaza in Wilmette.
Wayfair, every style, every home.